I just published a paper in the journal Anesthesiology, the leading scientific journal in the field, on the molecular mechanisms of anesthetic gases. My article was entitled "The Entwined Mysteries of Anesthesia and Consciousness: Is There a Common Underlying Mechanism?" And it's because these gases float in to these pockets and act. They don't form chemical bonds. All other drugs form chemical bonds. They form only very weak quantum forces. They're called London forces, but they're between neutral and uncharged molecules, and they're very delicate. And yet they're perfectly spaced in like a lattice configuration throughout the brain, so they can act collectively. So the anesthetic gases affect only these, seem to, at least my argument is, affect only these the quantum processes that are normally occurring in these sites throughout the brain that are responsible for consciousness. In other words, consciousness is produced by quantum processes.
All right. You said that a lot now, quantum processes. Can you explain what you mean by, you say it doesn't bond in the way most chemicals would bond or something.
Right. Well,
what do you mean by quantum forces?
Well, the anesthetic gases are basically inert. In fact, xenon, the inert gas, is a good anesthetic. There's no charge on them, so there's no electrons to donate or to even share. But they do have a very funny type of interaction between two molecules. It's kind of like each one is a dipole, is a little magnet. Okay, they're called dipoles, and as they get close to each other, the electrons in the cloud that make up one molecule push away the electrons in the cloud of the other, so that they have like two little, they become like two little bar magnets pointing in the same direction. They start out. So they form these very weak quantum magnetic forces, if you will, that actually oscillate back and forth so that they can be pointing in both directions at the same time, because that's a fundamental quantum property of superposition. But that gets into the quantum world, which is a very interesting area.
Boy, it certainly is. A dipole, of course. You mean as in, when you say dipole, I'm a ham radio operator, I think of a dipole antenna. And I suppose it's somewhat similar, but you're saying this dipole is like a
magnet. These are very tiny dipoles within a certain part of a molecule, like within a receptor, within a protein, in what's called a hydrophobic pocket. Little greasy, fatty areas within a more watery, polar type of medium. It goes back to basically oil on water. You know, you have oily material doesn't mix with water, and the oily material is made up of structures that have a lot of electron resonance. The electrons can move around over big areas, and those lead to quantum interactions because electrons are quantum particles. So it's probably best to think about, you know, the whole quantum world and how it's distinguished from our classical world.
Again, the gases that you use form these little dipoles and act in some quantum manner on the brain material, and all of this causes you to lose consciousness in a way that nobody quite fully, completely understands. How were these gases that are used today discovered?
Well, they started with, kind of recreational use, ether frolics and then laughing gas, and then it was found that somebody breathed a lot of it, they became unconscious and were insensitive to pain. So in the 1840s actually in America, they began to experiment with nitrous oxide and then ether for surgical anesthesia. And it was first discovered by a dentist in Georgia, and then it was presented at the Mass General in Boston. And the first time it didn't work, and they thought it was a bunch of baloney. And then the guy got it right, and he came back, and it worked. And so anesthesia really began in America, but it was also used in England. Chloroform was used there about the same time. So they began as recreational things that just were realized to have a very useful more useful application.
So recreational drug use really was the beginning of anesthesia.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that so? Just as a matter of, interest prior to that time, what was done? I mean, did somebody just take a big drink of whiskey and suffer through it, or
bite the bullet? Well, I mean, alcohol, various drugs that were used, but not the inhalational gases, and so none of the other drugs are as selective. The cool thing about the anesthetic gases is that they affect pretty much only consciousness, and that's it. And the point we're raising before is that they act. The fact they act by these quantum forces suggests that consciousness in the brain is due to quantum activities, quantum processes, rather than neurochemical, which are essential and important, but kind of a system within the system accounting for consciousness.
Oh, what a very, very good point. So the process that's going on in your brain that we call consciousness is, in fact, quantum.
I believe it is. I believe it's actually a coupling of quantum forces to physical components of the brain, but that it is a fundamental quantum process. That's my take on it anyway.
Oh, that's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.